Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada joins me now. How are you doing today, Friedman?
I owe you an apology. I got caught up running an errand longer than I normally would, so I'm a couple minutes late. I don't like to leave you hanging, especially the audience. The audience, the maximum they can hear you drone on is 5 minutes. Today it was seven, so I'd like to apologize to the audience, too.
That was my navel moment. I got to stare at my own navel here on the microphone for 7 minutes while I opined about Mikko Koskinen, who I really did feel good about. Like, there was a few things around Koskinen that I loved. One, his performance, the save on Dylan Dubé, and Kelly Rudy's commentary around him in the intermission on Hockey Night I thought was quite brilliant. We talked a lot about Koskinen on our podcast, so we'll keep it brief here. But do you have a quick thought on what we saw from a goaltender who, you know, didn't have the best first period at all, but then very much gave the Oilers a reason to win that game on Saturday?
Well, same thing. I think when you've been buried as much as that guy was last week, you're glad to see him have some success. But again, I would like to say that my friends in Calgary, and I have several, believe it or not, they were ripping me after the broadcast on Saturday night. They were like, oh my God, enough with the Koskinen love. They were all over me. Like, they were like, could you guys have been cheering for the Oilers anymore in that particular game? They were just hammering me. And I said, oh, come on. Like, you had to have some understanding of what was going on there. The guy was getting absolutely buried, and they were basically like, we don't care. We're Flames fans. It could have lasted one more day.
Okay, so unless you're a Flames fan, tough not to feel good about Mikko Koskinen, or for Mikko Koskinen, and it's going to be tough not to feel good for Keith Yandle tonight. Ties Doug Jarvis, 964, you know, years ago, breaks Gary Unger's 914. You know, I'm old enough to remember when that torch was passed back in 1987, and then Jack Evans scratched Jarvis, and he never played an NHL game again afterwards, sent down to the American Hockey League, and then packed it in. Quick thought on Yandle. Tonight he ties it against the Stars, beats it tomorrow against the Islanders.
You know, obviously, I'm really happy for him. You know, I've gained a greater appreciation of how hard it is to show up for work every day as a professional. You know, I've missed Hockey Night in Canada broadcast before. I missed one for personal reasons. I missed one for because I got the flu, actually, and I missed a game. So and I missed a broadcast this year too. You know, it's not something, you know, and you know, Jeff, like, you and I, we love to work, right? You know, we love our jobs. We like to do what we do. You know, it's a lot of fun for us. But still, like, even when you love your job, to show up to work every day as scheduled, it's hard. And it's not only, and sometimes you miss work because it's not even your fault. Like, something happens to someone you really care about, a family member, a friend, and you're like, I need this day. And you think about all the ways that you could miss a game in hockey that really have nothing to do with you. You're standing in the way of a shot and you're not even trying to block it, and it hits you somewhere, and all of a sudden you're out of the lineup for 6 weeks. And we know that almost happened to Yandle once. And, you know, I think it's incredible. I think to play this many games in a row as an NHL player, it's amazing. And it used to be, actually, Jeff, there were a bunch of guys who were getting close. And now we're down to two, and Kessel is right on Yandle's heels.
And I think at the end of all of this, whenever this streak comes to a conclusion, we're going to find out that he hasn't gone through one COVID test, right?
I am convinced that there is, like, something going on here where they're, like, hiding his tests. I know there's been some jokes about that. Like, he's the only player in the NHL not getting tested and things like that. Like, I guess privately people have been making jokes about it.
That's funny. Okay, Calgary Flames tonight facing off against the St. Louis Blues. I want to get to St. Louis here in a couple of seconds, but all of a sudden the Calgary Flames have hit a little bit of a speed wobble here. Scale of 1 to 10, how concerning is this for the Flames right now?
You know, for me, for me, it's not that high. I'm not as... Like, I generally really like Calgary. Their math is good. You know, they generally have played very well this year. You know, how many bad stretches of hockey have they had? Not many. They had that terrible one in Florida, Tampa, and Carolina. and they had that ugly game against Ottawa, but I thought they really righted themselves against Florida. You know, the problem with that Saturday game, you know what's really interesting about that game on Saturday is, you know, Mike Kelly of SportLogic, who we both, you know, we both really like his work, he tweeted out some stuff on the weekend about how Edmonton's expected goals and their actual defense has been pretty good of late, but their goaltending has been terrible. And that's one of the reasons they're losing. Like basically what the numbers in the eye test, you know, I mean, it basically showed the truth is that they were actually defending pretty well, but they weren't getting saves. And Saturday night in that game against Calgary, someone said to me, I think that was Edmonton's worst statistically, at least by the model that they use, and this was from a team, so I put some strength to it, was probably Edmonton's worst game of the year. Like, Calgary just owned the ice that game in terms of expected goals and quality chances, and they got beat. And, you know, I think that one really sucked eggs in a lot of ways for Calgary, because you're up 2-0 after one. We're all, you know, burying the Oilers in the intermission and how terrible this is for Koskinen. And you talked about all the great things Kelly said, and they lost the game. And I think, and plus two, it's a rival, it's the rival. So you're probably, I'm sure it's going to be an ornery, pissed off bunch of Flames tonight. I have no doubt that that's, you know, I mean, you get St. Louis on the back end of a back-to-back, you're probably going to get Binnington. It's going to be a challenge. St. Louis, good team.
Yeah,
you know what, Jeff? I'm not that worried about them. I know that they're probably worried, but I think they're going to be okay.
Okay, let's get to the St. Louis Blues here. And you mentioned Jordan Binnington. So Ville Husso has been the story. And let's not forget that once upon a time, you know, after he was drafted, I think it was like a third or fourth round selection by the St. Louis Blues, Ville Husso in a lot of ways was considered, and this is before, you know, Binnington popped and went on the miracle run and Stanley Cup and big contract, etc. You know, Husso had always been considered the goaltender of the future for the St. Louis Blues. There's their next starter right there. And it's taken some time. He's played in the American Hockey League a lot of time in San Antonio, etc. But all of a sudden this season, Ville Husso, okay, it's his turn to pop. And Ville Husso lately has been outstanding. I mean, anyone who follows, you know, the netminding subplots to the NHL, you know, has been screaming about Ville Husso here for a little while. So Ville Husso has been, a really nice story. This is Jordan Binnington's first year of his new big ticket deal, the 6-year, $36 million deal. The St. Louis Blues find themselves in second place in the Central. And Ville Husso, who's been fantastic, as many people are quick to point out, is also an impending UFA. How does this play itself? Knowing that you have Jordan Binnington ahead of you with that contract, you're the St. Louis Blues. You have eyes for a long playoff run. You know, I'm of the mind very much that the St. Louis Blues are looking to add at the deadline, big time. How do you see the net mining situation playing out in St. Louis? Do they just ride the two of them, and if they lose Husso, they lose Husso? Or do they say, we need to manage this asset, we have Joel Hofer waiting, he can be the backup, we're going to try to trade Husso and turn him into an asset?
I think that if you're the St. Louis Blues, you have one responsibility, and that is to win the Stanley Cup. And you choose the path that takes you there. And if the path is Ville Husso stays with us the rest of the year and we win with him and we lose him, that's the way it goes. And if the path is we hear what we can get for Ville Husso, and we can use that to flip for something that helps us win the Stanley Cup, or we can trade something else to win the Stanley Cup because we got this asset for Ville Husso, then you do that. Like, I think if you're Doug Armstrong, the only thing you're thinking about is winning the Stanley Cup. And you're picking the path that takes you there. Now, I think this, I think that he's one of the guys Edmonton asked about. You know, what are you guys thinking? And, you know, what I heard last week was Edmonton was looking to see, was there someone they could get for a late round pick? And, you know, that obviously didn't happen. At least it hasn't happened yet. Edmonton's not doesn't want to trade their first. And I heard they also weren't crazy about trading. Like, their second and third pick is tied up in their result this year because of the Duncan Keith deal. And they just weren't really interested. Because now, if they continue to falter, their second-round pick is could be a pretty high second-round pick, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that they're not really that interested in doing that. So if I'm the Blues, the decision I make is the decision that best allows me to try to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so all eyes are on this one. Calgary Flames and the St. Louis Blues. An interesting seven-game schedule this evening around the NHL. I want to get to Seattle. Now, for whatever reason, like the Florida Panthers, we're looking at them, we're saying, okay, this is the top team in the NHL. This is the best team. All due respect, Colorado. And you can make the claim that Colorado is. Hey, Tampa, look in your direction as well. But the Florida Panthers are very much in that conversation. For whatever reason, the expansion Seattle Kraken have their number. Beat them 4-1 in November. Beat them last night 5-3. Of note here, Jonas Donskoy, who has still not scored a goal this season, was a healthy scratch in that game last night for Seattle. Mason Appleton with one goal and one assist. Philip Grubauer, don't look now, but he's suddenly started to play at least a little bit better in net for the Kraken, and Seattle has won three of their last four.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got eyes on the deadline. Everybody knows this isn't going to be the Vegas Golden Knights 2.0. How do you see the rest of the season playing out for Seattle?
Well, I think the one thing about Seattle is, I think they're going to try to acquire whatever they can, especially when it comes to draft picks and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that Ron Francis talked about this year was, when they got hit with COVID, they weren't as deep as some other teams in terms of players they could bring in, right?
Yep.
Because they don't have organizational depth because they're in their first year. And that one kind of stuck with me. So I think that you're going to see them going to continue to try to look and build out their organizational depth. The tough thing with Donskoy is that, you know, look, I think he's a really good player, and I think that if you're going into the playoffs and you're looking for a depth forward, you kind of like Donskoy because he's been in the playoffs before. He understands what it takes to play at that level, and he's shown he can be very effective in that level. The problem is you've got everybody saying, hey, he's got no goals this year, and I guarantee there are teams out there trying to vulture him. Yeah. I can get this guy for a late pick because the numbers aren't good this year. But, like, I suspect that – you know, I there was a time this year when I heard Appleton's name out there that he wasn't playing a ton, and, you know, maybe it was an idea for him to go somewhere else. Mason Appleton was a really good third line player in Winnipeg last year. I look up and down their roster, Jeff, and I see, I mean, obviously people are going to talk about Giordano, but I see players like Donskoy, even though he's had an awful year, Appleton, you know, I see players that can help teams. And if I'm in Seattle, I'm using those players to build up assets, as many as I can.
I want to get to Bruce Boudreau because we only got a couple of minutes left here. So Gabby coaches game 1,000 yesterday. St. Louis Blues beat the Vancouver Canucks. Michael DiPietro gets the start. We all know about the Vancouver Canucks goaltending situation. We talked about it all weekend, specifically all Sunday. Just, do you have a thought on Gabby getting to 1,000? Like, when he was most recently unemployed, before Vancouver rolled around, you know, we looked at the games that he had coached, and we said, I don't know if he's going to get a chance to get to game 1,000. And here he is, and he's having success in Vancouver, and they love him. And I've always maintained the game is better when Bruce Boudreau is part of it. He's a guy who, you know, got his NHL start behind the bench later than most coaches. But do you have a thought here on Gabby, who you know, hits and then, you know, eclipses the 1,000 game mark?
I remember when he got hired in Washington, we went down to do a piece on him. And by that time, he had been coaching in the minor leagues for 22 years. And before he got hired by the Capitals, he told us he had one job interview in the NHL. And that was to be an assistant coach for the Los Angeles Kings because at the time he was coaching in Manchester, and that was their American Hockey League team. And he didn't get it. He had one, and now think about it. One job interview in 22 years. This was, what, 14 years ago?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's at 1,000 games, and he's got one of the best winning regular season winning percentages of any coach. You know, it's really amazing. It really is. And, you know, and I like the other thing, too, I think about this a lot. When I was starting out in the business, Jeff, I was told by a very prominent television executive, and we have joked about this since, that I was not good looking enough to be on television. Now, I know everybody listening to this will say that there's no way that can be true because, Elliot, you are a gorgeous physical specimen. I know that nobody will believe that could ever have happened. But I was told that early in my career that I was not good looking enough to be on TV. And, you know, my reaction to that was I've got to be good enough at what I do that someone's going to say, I'm going to put you on. And, you know, I was fortunate that, you know, there were people who eventually believed in me and I got to this point. But, you know, I hear that from time to time about people. It's you don't look the part, right? You know, John Hines, and I hate to bring him up because he actually doesn't. I've actually brought it up too much. But, you know, there were people who said John Hines will never be an NHL coach because he doesn't have the stature. And look at what they're doing in Nashville right now. There's at least one person out there who's a periodic GM candidate who I think would be a good GM. And, you know, people say he's not presidential. And, you know, I just think that I see a lot of people in the world who get underestimated because of their appearance. And I've really tried to, because of A, it happened to me, and, you know, I think it happened to Bruce, I think about that a lot. Like, am I judging people on the wrong things? Am I looking at someone and dismissing them because there's something about their look that doesn't immediately connect with me that it means I'm missing something that's potentially special about them, that they have an ability to do the job that I'm missing out on. And I think about that quite a bit, Jeff. And, you know, I'm really happy for him. You know, he's proven that he knows how to connect with players. And, you know, I think every year he's coached a full season, but one, like, I think they've made the playoffs, right? And making the playoffs is hard in this league. It's like half the teams don't make the playoffs. And, you know, it says to me that the guy's a good coach. And, you know, last night, again, they lost to St. Louis. But, you know, their COVID, like, completely blew up their goaltending. I know you and I are both big fans of DiPietro. I thought he played pretty well. But yep. As a team, they played really well. They had every excuse to lose that game. They did. But they battled and they carried the play. And I think when you have a night like that, and even though you don't get the result you want, when you play like they did, the players are buying into what the coach is telling them.
Before we wrap, quick thought on what we saw on Hockey Night Saturday. The Maple Leafs beat the Islanders by a final score of 3-1, and front and center here, and this will go a long way to answering a lot of questions about the Maple Leafs net mining situation, Peter Mrazek with 27 saves. Now, the Maple Leafs are in a situation where there's, you know, 12 games in February, there's 14 in March, and then there's 15 in April. So somewhere in here, your backup netminder, you know, is probably going to have between 18 to 20 starts, you would have to figure, or else you'd just completely exhaust Jack Campbell. Your thoughts on what you saw from Peter Mrazek on Saturday?
Well, it's important because it was pretty clear to me, you know, that the Maple Leafs were kind of losing faith in their backup situation, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an interesting debate about Campbell. Some people thought that Campbell was tired. Some people thought that, you know, the COVID shutdown for the team had completely taken him out of his rhythm. But whatever the case was, he needed a little bit of a reset. And you know, Mrazek gave them that. And you're going to need Mrazek with the February schedule. It's going to be a gong show. So, you really need a backup that you can trust. So that was obviously a hugely, hugely important step for Mrazek. And, you know, even if you wanted to move him, 2 more years at 3.8, that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah.
Very hard to do. So you better hope you can learn to trust him.
Absolutely. So they faced off against the Islanders. The Islanders as an organization, the fans, the team, the community, all of it, mourning the loss of Clark Gillies, who had passed away. The announcement came on Friday and stunned everybody. Beautiful tributes to Clark Gillies from his daughter, Brianna, wife of Justin Bourne, our colleague here at Sportsnet. And we extend all of our condolences to both the Gillies family and the Bourne family. Those two families are joined with Brianna and Justin. Listen, I have my memories of Clark Gillies and how he was able to change momentum in the Memorial Cup in 74, how he was able to do it in 75, you know, fighting Dave Schultz and giving the Islanders an identity which they had lacked for a long time, scoring game-winning goals in 1977, four games in a row he scored game-winners, one against Chicago in a preliminary round, then three against Buffalo before they ended up sweeping the Sabres. The Trio Grande line with Trache and Bossy, Hall of Fame nod, all of it. When you hear the name Clark Gillies, what will, Elliot, forever come to your mind?
Well, I think a lot of these tributes, I'm going to think a lot about, you know, to be honest, like Kelly Rudy in the opening on Saturday night showing him and Gillies with the bowling trophy from their team on, when they were the, I'm going to probably remember that one. I thought it was such a great picture that Kelly showed of him and Clark Gillies with the bowling trophy when they played together on the Islanders. I thought that was such a great photo.
That was awesome.
I think the one I really remember too was I once was introduced to Ed Hospodar, and there was a pretty memorable encounter where he was pushing Gillies around and cross-checking him and slashing him, and Gillies warned him not to do it. He warned him to stop, and when Hospodar didn't stop, he ended up in hospital. Yeah. And, I think that was a lot of who Clark Gillies was. Don't push me, don't push me, don't push me, you'll regret it. And, people did if they did. And he was an incredibly nice person. Like, to hear the way Kelly talked about him, I love that bowling trophy. I thought that was so good, that the bowling championship of the New York Islanders. I just loved it.
I love it. It's great. Condolences to the Gillies family from all of us here. Okay, Frege, back to your afternoon chores. We'll check in tomorrow.
All right, Jeff. Have a great day.